All right, we're going on. Good morning, my hearties. Yeah? That's better. We'll work on that. My name is Dave McClure, Pirate Dave to you. We're going to be teaching you a little bit about pirates and metrics for startups. All right, but before we get started, we're going to do a warm-up with everyone, so I want you to get your best pirate voice going here. All right, we're going to do three warm-ups. Ship ahoy. Can you say that?
Ship ahoy.
Not bad. Yo-ho-ho. Yo-ho-ho. You got to do this. Yo-ho-ho.
Yo-ho-ho. Ho-ho.
And then arr.
Arr.
That's not bad. I'm going to show you how my son does it, and he'll teach you a thing or two. All right, here's ship ahoy. Audio?
No audio.
Fail. All right, he's cute as a bugger. But anyway, all right, so you folks over there, we're going to do the wave pirate style. I want you folks over there, all down the line, turn to the person next to you, go like this and go, ship ahoy. When they look at you, you're going to turn to the person to the right of you, and you're going to go, ship ahoy. We're going to go across. Start in the front row, right there. Faster. Come on. Move it. Move it. Move it. That was utter fail. All right. One more time. It's like this. Ship ahoy.
Ship ahoy.
Ship ahoy.
Ship ahoy.
All right. You got it? Let's try that one more time. Over there. One, two, three. Go. Yeah, a little bit better. All right. Let's try it all together. Don't worry about the wave part. Ready? One, two, three. Ship ahoy! Pretty good. All right. One more. Do we have audio on this yet?
No.
No audio?
Hey, they're working against you, Dave.
Yo-ho-ho! Yo-ho-ho!
All right, you got that? That little bugger's not 3-year-old. If he can do it, you can do it. Ready? Like this. Twice. Yo-ho-ho.
Yo-ho-ho.
That wasn't bad. All right. All right. Last one. Oops, sorry. There was ship ahoy. There was yo-ho-ho. Any of you guys ever use a pirate keyboard? Arr. All right, ready? One, two, three.
Arr!
Come on, let's hear that one more time. One, two, three.
Arr!
We let him go?
I know.
You're going to walk the plank later for that. Okay, startup metrics for pirates. Why you should be a Web 2.0 entrepreneur? No, why you should be a Web 2.0 pirate?
Arr!
Arr! Arr! Please, audience, feel free to say R at every opportunity. All right. It's lower cost. It's a lot cheaper to build web startups these days than 5-6 years ago. There's lots of landlubbers out there online. And there's online advertising and e-commerce. But most importantly, online metrics. What's Web 2.0 about? It's all about measuring your users and modifying as you go, learning from your users. It's kind of cool. But more importantly, you can make money, and in our language, that's known as booty. Ready? Arr, there you go. You're getting it. You're getting it. Okay. So, here they go. 5 steps. Acquisition. Users come to your site from various channels on the web. Activation. They enjoy a happy first experience. Retention. They come back. Referral. They refer other people. Revenue. You make money. Booty.
Arr.
Arr. That's it. A-A-R-R-R-R. That's the man. Okay. Don't be intimidated by this. We're going to walk through this a little slowly. All right. So, in the yellow, that's acquisition. That's where users come from. 2 in blue is activation. They come to your site or your widget or whatever, and they have a happy first experience. 3 in purple, that's retention. They come back. 4, referral. They tell other people. 5, you make money. Booty. Very good. Okay, so what's a business model? It can be three things. You can get users, you can get usage, you can make money. Which of those is best? What do you think? Money, that's right. Profitable revenue is best. So acquisition and referral drive users, activation and retention drive usage, and revenue drives money. Hopefully it's profitable money. You can still build a business on users or usage, but eventually you need to turn that into money or get bought. Otherwise, you walk the plank. Okay, if you're a founder or CEO, which metrics should you focus on? Focus on a critical few and actionable metrics. If you don't make a decision with that metric, it's not actionable. I know all your landlubbers out there are using Google Analytics and you like to look at those pretty graphs, but they don't mean a goddamn thing if you don't do anything with them. So, simplify. Hypothesize your customer life cycle. That means figure out what you think they're going to do on your website. Choose 5 conversion steps or less. If you can, delegate each metric to somebody on your ship to own so that you can be steering while they're focusing on that metric. That's it. Keep it simple. If you're the first mate in charge of product or engineering, what do you build? You build features that increase conversion. And when I mean conversion, start your design by wireframing the conversion steps, measure an A/B test around those conversion steps, and iterate fast. Don't be too smart. Try and just guess what you think is going on, change it, measure it daily or weekly. Most importantly, don't spend 80% of your time building new features. Spend 80% of your time testing your existing feature set. Most of you landlubbers are way too impatient with features. Spend more time testing and understanding whether your features are working. If you're the mate in charge of marketing and sales, what channels and which users are important? They're important 3 ways. High volume channels, low cost channels, high conversion channels. When you're putting together a marketing plan, design and test your marketing channels and campaigns based on those 3 factors. Try and select and focus on the ones that are working well and optimize for deep conversion as possible you can, not just to the site of the landing page. A couple of things that you can probably use to improve are blogs, for getting ranking and getting keywords out there, SEO and SEM, search engine optimization and search engine marketing, landing pages, which people don't use very much at all, and automated emails. In the future, automated emails, RSS readers, and feeds. Okay, so acquisition. I get all these users, they're coming from various places. I measure for highest volume channels, lowest cost channels, best performing in percentage conversion to a target action on my site. When they get to my site, I want to do lots of landing page tests. If I can, I want to be able to use keywords coming from SEO or SEM to trigger different landing page tests so that when people are coming in on a search keyword, I can optimize the landing page for that experience. An activation criteria is up to you to choose. I would suggest you choose one based on a certain amount of time on site, page views, clicks, or 1 key feature usage. Could be that they sign up for an email or create an account. Most importantly, do lots of landing page tests. Don't be too smart. Okay, 3rd thing. Very simple way to increase retention, particularly if you are gathering emails. Set up automated emails so that you don't have to manually do a lot of this process. So lifecycle emails from when they first visit or join your site, maybe 3, 7, and 30 days. Status emails, don't be spamming them too much, but try and see if you can get a weekly or monthly email set up. Create event-based emails, so if a certain condition is set, say on a finance site you might exceed a balance or you have a notice about a payment, send those out. But make it easy to unsubscribe. You don't want to kill your email deliverability by doing too many emails, but you do want to try and get as much out there as they like. Referral. Ideally, encourage users to refer after they have a happy user experience. There are some differences in certain social applications, which we'll explore later. But if you can think about your site as an average score of 1 to 10, if your average user thinks you get an 8 out of 10 or better, great, start to do viral promotion or referrals. If not, you may be encouraging viral promotion of a crappy brand. Not a good idea. Okay, revenue. This is the part you guys have to figure out. I don't know how your site makes money. However, I would advise you not to just look at advertising. Look at lead gen, subscriptions, other ways to make money. Many people think of their sites being have to be free in order to be competitive with other people. However, For many of us, free also means less than $20 a month. I bet a lot of you have subscriptions for $20 or less a month that you actually haven't unsubscribed because it's kind of a pain in the ass. So effectively, below $20 or a month, it's sort of free. So try and test for some amount of subscription or payment if you can. All right. Lastly, if you can start to build a sense of what conversion activity is coming on in your site, again, I would try and choose 5 steps. This is probably already too complicated, but maybe estimate a value at each level. What this does is now gives you a way to focus on which areas you want to try and optimize for or which are most important for you, and you can make choices about whether acquisition, activation, retention, referral, or revenue are most important, and then choose your product features and choose your marketing plans based on which of those areas are most important. Biggest thing I see a lot of startups do is they make very subjective decisions about what their products are, what their product features are, or what their marketing plans are. And you want to be, again, looking at those ways that increase value, either for the user or for you as the site owner, hopefully both, and optimize for increasing those conversion levels. That's why you introduce features, or that might be why you reduce features and optimize or test your existing feature set. Okay, a marketing plan. A marketing plan is based on a combination of customer acquisition channels and campaign themes. Again, those three important factors you want to measure for success are based on the volume of leads or visitors that come to your site, the cost for acquiring those, and conversion, ideally to some target customer action. You want to test against different audience segments, campaigns, and calls to action. There's not necessarily one overall average. You may find there are different audiences that you want to identify and test for. Important to match your channel cost to your revenue potential. So what does that mean? If I estimate a potential conversion and a revenue potential, I want to be spending less than it takes to acquire that channel. Doesn't necessarily have to start out that way, but ideally in the end, you want to be optimizing for spending maybe half or less than half. Three different things you could choose. You could choose for one particular transaction value, maybe if you're an advertising or commerce site. It could be that you feel you want to estimate that over 1 year, so an annual revenue per user. Or it could be that you're looking at an overall customer lifetime value. In any of those cases, whichever you think is the potential revenue per customer, try and drive channel costs to half or less than half of that channel. There are always trade-offs, so some ways to look at cost is actual money out the door, but also time for your marketing and product groups. And again, if you can do things in marketing that don't affect your product group, that's actually cheaper in many ways. And also timing of expense versus revenue may also impact your decisions. Here's an example of a set of marketing channels which you might choose. I would not advise you to do all of those as part of your marketing plan, but you may want to test for several of them. If you can, again, leave your product group to be building features ideally, unless you're sure that those marketing channels are driving lots of customers or revenue. Try and get your marketing to build out channels initially that are low cost for them and low cost for your product group. Gradually, as you start to understand your audience, maybe introduce higher cost or higher resource expends on either of those two groups. Again, I would advise that lots of things are much less cost than others. Personally, I think hiring a part-time blogger that blogs based on your keyword vocabulary on a regular basis can be a very effective and low-cost way to rank for certain terms and generate an easy amount of SEO. Okay, I'm done. I'm going to pass it off to Pirate Ted, who's going to talk about acquisition on Dogster and Catster.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to take you on a ride of the last 14 months of Dogster and Catster. These are online communities for pet lovers. Very high word of mouth factor that led to almost all our users up to that point. And we had decided in early 2007 that we were going to start doing some marketing. If all these people were hearing about our site from friends, why not get the site out faster by putting it in front of people's eyes? So we made a plan of getting up to 2,000 new registrants a day. I think at the time we were about 400 new registrants a day. And we spent money advertising in AdSense and blog ads. At first, we just linked these ads to our homepage, and we realized people were just skittering away. So we made a landing page. Hey, welcome. You've come to Dogster, and explain what Dogster is. That didn't work so great, so we made the landing page dynamic based upon where they came from. We'll look at some examples of that. Oh, meow.
You got cats in your presentation.
They'll bite your head off. This is an example of a landing page for Daily Candy. It was sassy and bright and showed you can be famous on a Dogster. You can win a fashion paparazzi camera package. Here's one on dog information. This turned out to be the biggest thing of all the different keywords we tested was information. People wanted more and more information. So at this point, we have the registration page right on the landing page. So you come from an ad click. Boom, here you are. Learn about all this site. Register now. We started getting 2,000 registrations a day. We were so psyched, we stopped paying attention to a lot of other things, like that the fact that they weren't even activating. So what we were doing, we were so good at getting people to come and register that I think they didn't even realize what they were registering for. And when they explored around the site more, they realized that actually there isn't that much of exactly what I was wanting to find. Okay, so we started seeing that they were activating at an incredibly low rate, in like the 50s. Our normal activation rate is about 95%, and here we have 55%. So we think this is really important. We're going to focus on that. So then we change our registration path. So before you're finished, we say check your email, use this to resend the email, all types of advice about that. And that got us up to about 70%. But what we realized was it doesn't make a difference because these people weren't doing anything. They weren't making pet pages. They weren't getting active in the community at all. So while it seemed great to us that we were getting members to join the site for about $2 in advertising cost, they weren't doing anything, and they were worth 1/100 what our normal member was. This took us 3 months to figure out, and we were doing heavy ad campaigns because we thought we were killing it. We thought we were on track to just make this kind of perpetual motion machine, and we finally just turned it off, and we should have done that a lot sooner because we weren't looking at the metrics further down the line. But what we did learn from this, So our members picked up on Talk Like a Pirate Day, and these are all member-made images that they posted to the site to share with friends.
Arr.
Yeah, thank you. Arr. So what we learned was that, and this David talks about this, is search engine marketing is a great way to test keywords because sometimes your keywords, you're never going to get them in the top even 100 of a search result. But if you pay, you can find out what's interesting. And we found out that information is what's driving a ton of interest in our site more than sociality is definitely there and entertainment, but a lot more people are interested in dog and cat information. And it was available on our site. You just had to make a profile and go to the forums and find the right forum and ask your question. So what we did was we pulled a lot of that to the front. You'll see on the top nav, if you can, there that we now have breed info, answers, local listings. There are now 5,000 questions that have been asked. And we rank on all types of crazy pet-related keywords now because someone asked a really good question on it and there were really good answers in it. That also allows members to participate, the ones who like participating, to come along and answer questions. Local listings are the same thing. Breed info is the same thing. So we made this new homepage. A logged-in member sees a much more dynamic homepage with all their information, but this is for a first-time visitor. And we added get info, connect, and find a dog. If you go to the next page, we're going to see some slide shots of using Crazy Egg, which is a tool made by Heaton's company, actually. And they've got some really great views of click tracking. This particular one shows confetti. It breaks down. We're looking at the top 15 inbound refers. And what I did was I selected out just the domains where I knew people were coming for the first time, stumble upon Time Magazine and this other cute pet contest. And then so now we get to really extract out people who are, and they're all going to breed. They're all going to information. Our middle column of connect, which is everything that the site had offered to date, no one clicks on it. It's not, they get into that eventually, but they're really coming to learn, well, I want to know about my dog.
It's like they also were taking the poll.
Yeah. The poll, that's really just simple click and get it. And they click along our information, our like news of the week stuff. This next is a different view using Crazy Egg of keyword terms that people came to the site from. And so with this, we were able to extract when they search on Dogster or Catster, which is the most popular inbound search terms, and just see dog and other dog-related terms. And here again, we see they're going to breed. They're going to the breed keywords. A lot of them don't use the top buttons at all. It's just really fascinating. So we've combined this with keyword density tracking to compare where people are searching on the sites that do better in us in terms of information. What's our keyword density? How many times do they have the word dog on the homepage? And we found out that we were still, even for all this, we still had dog on the homepage about 8 times. And we're a dog site. Same with puppy isn't on the homepage at all. You know, we kind of knew these things, but we didn't realize how egregious, how much of an effect it has until we really started studying it. So if you go to the next slide, this is what our new logged out homepage is going to be. I kind of cut the top off there. But now the top links are all information related. The poll is still front and center. The breed stuff's front and center. We've added headlines to all our blogs. That's another idea we took from David, which is just start adding a lot of blogs. We blogified a lot of content. So we have really great archives, and it's definitely, we found that our information areas like answers and locals, 80% of the 80% of the visitors are coming from a search engine. Our regular site's about 30%. Information just kills, clearly, on SEO. So now we're getting the kind of usage that we were paying for. Last month we had our highest number of uniques, our highest number of registrants than we did, except for the highest month when we were paying $90,000 for advertising. So this has been a long process and a lot of things we wish we had been paying attention to faster, but it's really working out.
So you essentially used a set of search engine marketing campaigns and keyword vocabulary exploration to come to an unpaid method of acquiring users more effectively.
Exactly. And then tracking what our big, I think my last slide, it's just the tools we use. And I obsess over them a little too much, and I really shouldn't, because David said there's just too much information in there. But bounce rate is really key. If we can get the bounce rate down 1% on our homepage, that's, you know, 1 in 100 more people. When you start getting millions of people coming, that really adds up. So we use filters, goals, and funnels in Google Analytics. We use Crazy Egg, which is the click tracking software. There are a bunch of common SEO tools we use, which is like search engine ranking, placement. How does dog compare on the whole list? And we make tons of internal tools, and the ones that make sense we keep, and then we just get rid of the other numbers, which are distracting.
Thank you, Pirate Ted.
All
right. Up next, we have Pirate Todd from Ship Legit talking about activation.
I'm here to tell you a sad story of activation. This was our old sign-up process last year. Now, by definition, we put a widget on your blog that searches all this different content, which is also the bad part of the sign-up process is we have to find all the content. So it's your blog. It's all your user-generated stuff. It's the people who are in your network, other blogs you read. So it's just, it's a big problem right from the beginning. And when we launched the company, you know, the software engineers wrote the code. So So basically, there was like 900 input fields to get like any value out of the product at all. And as a result of that, conversion was miserably low on a low number of people coming to the site anyway. So it wasn't that great. If you were an expert software tester, you could sign up for our product in about 20 minutes. So that wasn't really conducive, actually, to using the product or having a successful anything.
Sounds like you need to make some of your engineers walk the plank.
Oh, I'm telling you, it was a scurvy. All right, Dave. So the new process, so we took the same software engineers that messed up the product at the beginning. Thank you. Oh my God. And so what we did is we told them, hey, you guys got us into that. Why don't you get us out and use automation to try to fulfill most of these steps. So that's exactly what we did. And kind of along the way, the other things we wanted to do is make it a little entertaining, a little mysterious, because there's still a lot of clicks in this process. There's just not a lot of entry. And as a result, we saw some really good numbers. It went from 15 to 20 minutes to about a 2-minute install now. And conversions are about the 4% of people that land on the site, which is pretty good given that we're taking real estate off of their blog in exchange for our functionality. So what we did is the first change we did was, I think, a stroke of genius on the part of one of our software guys. We actually installed the My Blog Log widget on a home page of our site. And I get a lot of questions why you did that. And the reason we did it is because using the API off the widget, we could extract the blog URL automatically from the visitor landed on the site and put it in the input field for the next click, which was go ahead and go. I get a lot of interesting comments on this. I'll hit you on the end. The second thing we did was after we grabbed that blog URL automatically, we go and look at the user's blog or publication, scrape it for user IDs of other widgets they're using, and then go out and kind of entertain them while we go look to see if their ID is on these other sites and present it to them. So things spin, and it entertains them to the point where they're like, you know, they're three screens into this process now, and basically they say, well, I want to see where this is going, because all I've done is click the button three times. I haven't input anything yet. And so, you know, basically at the bottom line is by the time we've asked them for one input field, I think we ask them for a total of three now. They actually have to type in their username and their password. They're already at the install button to place it on their blog, and as a result, we have pretty high conversions based on that. And we get lots of great kind of user feedback on the product. Where we used to get, hey, that's great service, but man, you know, I had 20 minutes. Now we get stuff like, you know, it's really easy to install. It took me only a few minutes. And the interesting ones we get are, how the hell did you get my blog URL and stick it in that box? And we get all kinds of accusations about we're stealing it out of their browser history and stuff. But once we tell them, they go, oh, that's really actually pretty cool. And so it was actually a great process. We took what would have been, I don't even know how to quantify it. I sat down and tried to quantify it. It was probably like 100 clicks and, you know, 27 input fields to basically like a series of like four or five clicks, and they're good to go.
All right. Thank you, Pirate Todd. Pirate Heaton.
Arr, there you go, mate.
So Crazy Egg helps you visualize your visitors, as Ted has already shown some screenshots. I'm going to run you guys through an example for increasing engagement and retention. This is what we all want our visitors to be doing on our sites, correct? So this is a site called WeGame. It's a video download site or a video sharing site. And it's basically a YouTube for gamers. They provide a client that you can download that will help you record your sessions and upload them to their site. This is basically a video page, an individual video page, which is about where 90% of the traffic goes on their site, and it wasn't getting as much engagement as we, you know, had thought it would. So we started running some tests on it. If you notice on the sidebar, there's a download call to action on the top, then there's information about the video, and then there's this whole thing about related videos, and that's really the engagement box. So we wanted to test and see how people were reacting to all this. And using Crazy Egg, what we discovered was, these are the three different views, and what we discovered was that people were just clicking on the first two videos, especially the first one, because that ended up being above the fold in the sidebar because we had all that other crap above it. And so the click-through rates on all this stuff was really low. It's something that wasn't encouraging. So we decided to change the layout. And this is what we changed the layout to. What we did was we moved the information right below the video, moved the call to action to download a lot lower on the page because we realized that people weren't coming to this video page to download the client. They were coming here to view videos. So, and then we divided up the sidebar into two different listing sections. Before, it was tabbed. And the tabs are actually really awful, and we only had one click on the tab. I'll show you later at the end. And here were the results of that. A lot more heat, a lot more clicks. And both of these tests were about 3,500 visitors. So very equivalent amount of visitors, and the engagement level has basically gone through the roof. The results are next. So there was a 40% increase in page views per visitor. As you can see, the new structure was creating a lot more clicks, just like the last example, and the engagement level is much higher now.
Why do you think they were scrolling down?
You mean
now it seems after they're going further down the page for clicks versus before.
Actually, this is all above the fold now. We moved it all above the fold. So gotcha. We moved the information to the left, and the sidebar, this related video sidebar, is exactly smack dab in your face on the right. So right after they watch the video, we're assuming they go over there and start clicking through to more of them.
Got it. Cool.
All right. Thank you, Pirate Heaton. And last up, Pirate Lance from Ship Rock You.
Arr.
Arr is for referral.
All right. So Rocky's mission is to engage basically everyone in the room and everyone in the world through social applications. At the current time, we're the fastest growing site in the world in terms of user acquisition. So if you look at how we've grown that quickly versus, you know, some of the traditional large companies, it's all through referral traffic. It's through basically viral growth. And referral traffic is key to viral growth. There's two major types of referral traffic that are important. One is the install flow when you first add an application, and the other is engagement flow where you come back and use the application on a daily basis. So this is an example. There's an application on Facebook called Bumper Sticker. And when you install that application, you get a specific call to action. I think it's basically add a sticker for your friends. And then when you click that, you get a call to action. Can you read that?
Select the friend you want to share sticker.
Yeah, select the friend you want to share sticker. So your call to action to be a top 10 app doesn't even have to be grammatical. And you can have a top 10 app on Facebook. So it's really about basically on the install flow, creating some kind of call to action to engage your friends and to refer your friends. Then the next example is engagement flow. So this is something where every day you have, you know, some kind of call to action. In this case, there's an app called Friends for Sale. And on the top, it says make $10,000. So that's something that, you know, call to action every day you want to make $10,000. So you click that. And what that does is it brings up another call to action to invite your friends. So by creating sort of recurring install flow actions that, you know, cause you to invite your friends, and then recurring engagement that causes you to invite your friends, you can get a lot of friends invited, and that gets you referral traffic. So here's how the viral loop works. First of all, a user comes in, and then there's some kind of call to action to invite your friends, and they will invite X friends. So, you know, average person may invite maybe 5 friends. And then they'll either accept or they'll decline. If they accept, your accept rate might be a certain percentage, and that might be a percentage Y. And then the big point is if X times Y, if your number of people you invite multiplied by your accept rate is greater than 1, then your application is viral. And that means that you can acquire users for free. So basically, you'll have perpetual user creation. So the things that most people don't know would be what typical numbers are and what you should be striving for. So I'm going to give you some typical numbers of what we shoot for. On the install flow, let me take a look at this example. So install flow, X equals 5. So you basically try to shoot for a call to action that invites at least 5 people with accept rate of maybe 22%. That would get you viral. For an engagement flow, which is the next example, you can look for maybe on a recurring basis over a period of a week, you invite 20 people and maybe with a 6% accept rate, and then you'd be viral, you know, with a 1.2 factor. So basically, those are some typical numbers that you might see over a period of time. Now, the interesting thing is install flow is really good because everybody goes through the install process at least once, and that's a linear flow. So you can actually drive them directly through that flow. For the engagement flow, the interesting thing is that if you get people to use the site every day and invite people every day, then you can actually get perpetual sources of invite going on. So in some cases, what you really need to do is use multiple sources to get a positive viral flow. So if the invite flow is like 0.5% and one of your engagement flows is 0.3%, another one is 30%, then you add them all together, and together they can create a viral loop. So in this case, invite would be a 50% rate. Engagement flow with using notifications on Facebook might be 30%, and invites on Facebook might be 30%, and then you get a positive viral flow. So here are some really important tips if you guys are doing viral tuning. I have to go there and take a look.
Your eyesight ain't very good, Pirate Lance.
So first of all, your install flow should generate most of the referrals. So if you look at the major viral growing websites, Facebook, MySpace, Facebook and Bebo, a lot of social networks, they all have install flow that lets you invite your friends at the beginning by importing your email contact list. that ends up being key to viral growth. So you really, in your install flow, because it's a linear flow, you really want to have some kind of referral flow as part of that. Everyone is going to be using it, so make sure it's good. This is probably what you should test the most when you first start out making a website. You should test different calls to action, you know, different pages, different number of button clicks to see what works the most. And if all else fails, the bumper sticker flow, which says you get $10,000 for every friend you invite, that works. For engagement flows, that should supplement your install flow to add virality. And not everyone will engage, so this won't be necessarily a stronger flow. It'll usually be a weaker flow. But the neat part is that if people come back to your site every day, then all of that engagement adds up to more invites and more referral traffic over time. You should consider having the primary engagement flow for your site involve other people, involve new people, and that will trigger your growth. So for example, if your primary purpose of your site for a dog store was basically show your dog to your new friends or you know, basically have your dog meet new friends, that might be a powerful new flow. Again, you have to test calls to action. So we test this and we use metrics on about a 5-minute scale. When we release a new call to action, we'll test it on a 5-minute basis versus, you know, the previous flow to see if it was effective or not. And then on a daily and weekly basis. If all else fails, offer $20,000 because it worked the first time. It should work double the next time. Oh, you do it in $20,000 in some virtual currency that doesn't convert to real cash. And then finally, I want to talk about decay. So it turns out that even if you're viral to begin with, that doesn't mean you're going to be viral forever. It turns out that all channels decay and accept rates decay. In particular, your invite rate is going to go down over time as you saturate your target market. And also, your acceptance rate is going to go down over time as people have already got one invite and they got a second invite. By the third invite, they're probably tired and they don't want to join your site. So because engagement tends to decay also, that means that your recurring source of invites is going to go down. And in the end, that means you have to do continuous improvement. So even after you get something that's viral and growing on its own, you still have to work actively to improve it. A lot of people think they're done, but they actually have to apply work to it every day. So we have engineers all the time that have to constantly improve a flow or change messaging.
Thank you, Pirate Lance. And you guys also do marketing, cross-marketing within applications that are families as well, right? Okay, so I think at this point we're ready to throw it open to our audience a little bit.
Any questions, yes, scurvy dogs?
By the way, questions must be done in the aisle. You have to begin your question with R, but we have a few beads for you if you answer. Bring up some good questions.
R, me mateys.
R.
Thanks. so I have currently unemployed, but used to work for Nielsen Online and doing web analytics. One of the things is pulling data from lots of different sources and getting people to actually use that data. Do you guys build dashboards, or how do you distribute out to the people who matter?
People who matter, meaning your product and engineering groups?
Anyone in the organization or externally who needs that data.
Yeah. Anybody want to talk?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We actually spend a lot of time on dashboards. In fact, we have large screen TVs in our office that all the employees are forced to look at every minute of the day.
Yeah, we build custom tools and we look at almost single metrics at a time. So it's more like Dave said, we focus on a very small number of things, and we look at almost like one metric for the entire day or period of time that we're tuning.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, one thing I've seen is that a lot of times people look at metrics very often, but again, if you're not testing and making a decision about that metric, you're not really learning a lot from it. So I think it's easy to get pulled in and entranced by lots of pretty pictures that Google Analytics generates, but ideally you want to be saying, what question am I answering with this metric? I'm running an A/B test, I'm running something sequentially, I'm looking at this data and comparing it to another one so that I'm either making a change on a landing page or a button color or font text or something like that. So I encourage you to be thinking of a question to answer when you're looking at a metric.
The other thing I would just add is it especially in a small startup, when it's on the data you're collecting yourself, you know, you have your software engineers write, you know, these different routines and stuff, and they're not as in tune with the business as you are. So you not only have to collect the data and look at it and understand it and act on it, you also have to question it, because, you know, sometimes you'll look at it and you'll go, man, we're rocking. And then you'll find out, no, somebody's just like triple counting something. You're like, great.
And that's also a good reason to simplify your metric structure, so that you can communicate that quickly and easily across the organization. So often the biggest challenge is getting everybody to agree what's the most important thing that they're looking at. So building that set of conversion steps and then agreeing that, okay, well, right now in the part of our organization's growth, acquisition, finding high volume acquisition channels is the most important thing, or increasing our conversion percentage on landing pages is the most important thing. And it's tough because a lot of times, you know, people don't necessarily agree on what those priorities are, and it can lead the organization in different directions. So just getting some amount of consistent communication about what your organization's goals are and then what the prioritization of those goals are then can lead to more focus and testing in ways that improve your product.
I'd like to add, it's worked a lot better for us when the engineer makes those tools right away. They don't start on another project and then get back to it. And then we do obsess over them right away to find the bugs in them, to find the errors, to find what's really interesting. But we do that right away where we're really hot on it, instead of waiting a couple weeks where we ran into the problem we had before.
And so another way to think of that is, when product managers are writing specs or when developers are writing specs, is they're writing that spec with an intent to improve a specific metric. And again, they may also be not writing a new feature. They may be just iterating an existing feature with an intent to produce an improvement in that metric. A lot of times, people measure product organizations by how fast you spit features out and how many things you get shipped, how many bug releases you improve. And I don't think that's the right way to look at it. You should be looking at what metrics are you trying to improve. Sometimes pulling features out or introducing really buggy features fast may be the most effective method to improve those metrics. Yes, I'm sorry, have a Joel see.
Arr.
Arr. Arr. No. Say that one more time.
Arr.
That's better.
My name is Sarah. I'm with a... Thank you.
We need you guys to get closer. Sorry.
Awesome. I'm with a site called Polyvore, which has been around for about a year, and users are actually using it to build outfits.
That's a great site.
Thank you. Everybody check it out.
How do you spell that?
Polyvore.
Awesome.
One of the things that we're kind of struggling with is... we have obviously about 10% of our users who are power users who are making outfits that are really cool, and the rest of everyone else is kind of just consuming. So in the first year of a site, who's really more important? Should we be kind of streamlining the site for people who are going to be consuming and kind of browsing and favoriting and commenting, versus the people who want more features and want the editor to be better because they are the ones creating things?
Can I ask, clarify, what's the business model?
You can take products from any site. So you can take a shirt from Gap.com and match it with jeans from somewhere else. And we actually get a cut every time someone actually buys any of the products that they see.
Okay. So it's important to have a minimally critical amount of content, but after some point, it's more based on how much stuff users see and activate on or click on to kind of drive revenue.
Exactly, and it's not necessarily the people creating the outfits who are actually purchasing. It might be the people just looking and buying. Right.
So I think this follows sort of a similar path with a lot of other people, is that you have to figure out a way to get, you know, certain critical mass of content, or at least from the user's perspective, a critical mass of content that feels satisfactory. And then after that, I think you're really focusing on activation or clicking on some particular monetization action. But I don't know, Lance may also have some ideas. I think getting a distribution process going where you're bringing users in the door once you kind of get after that critical mass may be more important than focusing directly on the activation step that monetizes.
Right, I might try to focus on getting reach first and then some level of engagement, increasing engagement afterwards. I saw your site. It's really good. I mean, the brand potential is huge, and we really want to work with you. So please talk to us after this. In fact, I'd like to co-launch potentially a Facebook application to get you more penetration with some kind of concept like that.
Awesome.
I think you'll commonly see a lot of people focus on distribution first, engagement second, and then monetization third.
Right.
One thing that could be interesting is if you have two distinct groups, you may figure out an incentive structure for people to do distribution. That's a minority of your audience, and then figure out a way to do, you know, user engagement optimization for the main set of folks. So that's common where there's a lot of places where there's two distinct set of audiences that are driving behavior on the site.
Short.
My name is Brian Massey. We're launching a Facebook app initially called Book Lobby, April 1st. I think the primary question is on the engagement side. Are there for those of us that don't have a development team, and I'm thinking primarily of my customers, any more resources for how we can do repeat emails and things like that that are on the web that don't require a developer? And I wanted to also know, each of you probably have a guy that or a team that manages these changes. So someone who's watching the conversion information and then going to the content producers or the engineers and asking them to make changes based on that. What position is that, or is that a team effort? I was curious how each of y'all do that.
So sorry, the two questions. First one's, what's a simple autoresponder or email tool?
Yeah, so additional resources that y'all have used, like Crazy Egg is a great find for me.
I guess I've used a tool called Aweber, A-W-E-B-E-R,
Aweber.
In the past. But there are a lot of marketing email automation tools out there. I don't know that I have a particular favorite. Do you guys have any that you
for Facebook? It turns out that there's an API for sending emails to the users. Facebook, so you don't actually have the user's email address. You actually use an API call. And there is one email group that actually came out with a tool set that uses that API. And you can actually contact them. I don't have the name right now, but if you send me an email, lance@rocky.com, I can actually find that for you.
Okay.
As for the person made, I would say it's the CEO.
Really?
It is at our place.
Is that true for all you guys, or is it a group sort of a thing?
No one's going to care about your business more than you.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, so what I've seen is usually it's a product manager, but initially it should be the CEO should actually care enough about the metrics where they'll actually track that actively.
Yeah, I think at least until you get like agreement across your organization about what the metrics are, CEO should be setting that up. Once you do get that agreement, then like I was saying before, if you can delegate a metric to someone in your organization to really own, then I think it helps for that person to be focused on that. You'll still have to balance contention when you have two people optimized for different metrics and they're maybe competing for resources. Are you sick or are you?
Sorry, I'm Asian, so I no problem. I'm Singaporean pilot.
You must be from Macar.
So thanks, Dave. So my question is this: now, Rocky obviously focuses on Facebook, and Facebook obviously have a lot of viral loops, right? That really helps you get the word out very effectively. But I think for most of us out here, we are focused on standalone apps, and the same kind of viral loops are just not built in that way. And email is getting a bit old, and import your Gmail, everyone's doing that. So any tips for actually getting that viral loop if it's a standalone application?
So you're talking about non-social network-based applications or normal websites, right?
Yeah, I mean, normal websites, like normal applications that run outside of Facebook. I mean, I think most of us are looking at having a Facebook presence, but I think most of the activity are still going to be outside of Facebook. Right. So how can we actually make use of both social networking sites as well as just a normal email kind of way to drive viral stuff?
So I mean, one thing I was showing before in the different marketing channels is, viral isn't always the best way for you to acquire customers depending on your website. And in a lot of cases, I think search is overlooked, or SEO and SEM are overlooked as being large volume channels. I think there's still some level of virality which might be helpful for your site. In particular, if you can identify, an audience that's passionate about your product and maybe even financially incented in some ways or emotionally incented sometimes, those can be your evangelists to help, drive better visibility. So it may not be a full, one factor, but it might be a significant multiplier on your existing user base. It's not as frictionless to do that referral process on a normal website as it is on Facebook. But interestingly, I think over the next year or two, you'll start to see the ability for people to be having a logged in experience on other sites. So you already have the ability to maybe use a Facebook login externally on another site. And people also have the ability to use a Google or Yahoo or another type of an account login. So I think you'll start to see ways that you can apply some of the social application techniques on social networks, on off-platform sites as well, if you can readily recognize those account logins and use them as part of your site. So it's not always easy to implement viral loops on regular sites, but still trying to be looking for ways to drive high volume channels of activity and ways to magnify that with distribution.
Yeah, basically email, you should still do it because even if you're basically below one, you can actually use marketing to go and drive a flow that will, you know, and have a multiplier because of the email part. And then widgets with self-expression in MySpace, High Five, that's also a possibility. It's not directly viral like Facebook, but it gives you a positive multiplier.
And I think Lance's point before about using multiple channels to kind of get to a viral impact. So some of that is based on initial activation processes where you're driving referral right away, others based on more engaged processes that happen over time. So I don't know, that to me was a very helpful slide.
Just real quick. So Dave, do you think that the same kind of viral metrics calculation that Lin was talking about actually applies for other applications as well?
For other what?
Applications outside of Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see it certainly in sites like YouTube. Occasionally, you'll see really dramatic growth in certain areas, even in just blogs. I think you can see it. So, you know, trying to identify the set of steps where someone sees something, engages, tells someone else, or publishes in a way that other people see it, and then those people come back. It's not always based on a direct push of the information via an application or email, although those are probably the primary methods, but also just a publishing loop that works for visibility, or you know, someone that's creating a great, you know, keyword visible article that drives search traffic can also be creating a viral loop. So you can have different ways to do that viral loop that are not just based on email or apps, app invitations.
Okay, and now here's my pirate dog for Ted here.
Hark, hark, hark.
How's that?
Guys got talent.
Yeah, join the kennel.
Okay, I'm with a company called Iterasi, and you guys have been asking us to talk like a pirate, right? Can you say Iterasi like a pirate? Do you think
Iterosity?
Iterasi. Okay. So anyway,
find a shorter domain.
All right, very great. So Iterasi hasn't launched yet. It's a way for you to dynamically save web pages, essentially notate a page that you're at, and also schedule pages that you want to save.
You got 20 seconds for your plug. Where's the question?
There's the plug. So my question is, do you guys have any good resources or experiences that you can recount for marketing plugins in particular? Any success stories out there? I'm just looking for your expertise in
marketing and plugins.
Yeah, like plugin app. Yeah,
like to IE
or Firefox browser
plugins.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our experience has been that anytime you have a download as part of any kind of loop, your dropout rate is about 90%. So you actually can't do anything virally with a plugin. So you end up having to do more traditional marketing, use your traditional marketing channels like pay, display advertising. I haven't seen anything that's possible virally with a download.
You may also, you know, again, look at financial incentives to drive sort of minimum critical distribution if you need that.
So what do you mean by that?
Pay people to install.
Okay.
Or if you can bundle your functionality with somebody who already has a plugin channel. I mean, maybe I don't know what the business is, but if you can put your code in with theirs and they already have that, that's probably a good way to go.
Yeah, and I wasn't being, you know, tongue-in-cheek there. So there's a viral loop of sorts with arbitrage. So if you can get a monetary impact back that's greater than what you're paying for people to, you know, distribute your tool, then that's a viral loop of sorts, assuming you have enough inventory to go after and you can keep pushing that channel to drive a positive feedback loop for your company.
I'd suggest looking at StumbleUpon.
Yeah.
I know they had a lot of slow growth, but eventually they have reached a mass scale. They do have, I think they did the destination site stuff after they had enough content through the toolbar, and then they have the share and the thumbs up, thumbs down, and things like that. That provides a lot of visibility. So I think if you provide good user incentives off the toolbar, like mm-hmm. on a destination site, there is a possibility of getting, you know, good distribution.
And this is sort of maybe non-intuitive, but sometimes if you're trying to get people to do a direct action, it still may be that providing visibility and emphasizing that as the call to action is a better way to go. So if you think about sort of the experience on YouTube, there's maybe three things going on. One is your people are viewing stuff, people are contributing stuff, and then people are cutting and pasting and distributing that stuff. And actually, that second piece is possibly the most, the last one's possibly the most interesting. People don't necessarily think about that. You tend to emphasize, you know, either viewing or pushing, publishing over the referral process, but that referral process may be the most impactful.
Another good guy to talk to is Alex Iskold at Adaptive Blue. They've been reasonably good, I think, at the plugin space.
Thank you.
Arr! That's wonderful.
Arr. Hi, I own an internet agency in Austin, and we created a site called Clutter Diet. And clutterdiet.com. It's for one of our clients who came to us. We built that for her. And it's an online organizing site. And right now it's subscription-based. And I've seen a lot of just ad revenue-based sites. And we're trying, you know, we're kind of struggling. She's getting a lot of national attention in the press. And she's starting to build a user base. But trying to hang on and get some, it's a lot harder to add somebody who's paying than it is to add somebody who's free. And so I didn't know if any of you guys had started off as subscription-based sites and gone over to ad, what the conversion process is, how difficult it is, what your experience is. That's mostly wanted to hear about.
So I was at PayPal back in 2001 to 2004, and not quite the same, but there is a fair amount of services that PayPal initially introduced that were free of charge, or at least free under certain conditions. And then gradually they added additional contingencies that basically converted people to a paid process. And I would say that's maybe the mindset people tend to think of being like either I'm free or paid, or I'm free and paid versus paid at the initial experience. And I think you probably have to be free or close to free, you know, for the initial experience. But then you can start to play with what types of percentage of features you keep for free, or whether you reserve certain things for paid. Again, that can be challenging, and you may want to be looking at what your growth rates are if you do or don't do that with certain features. But I tend to think that if you are doing a valuable service, at some point you probably want to figure out what percentage of those services will be paid for. It just may depend on timing and other market competition, whether you do that sooner or later in the life cycle. And you may still be reaching, and also how much capital you have. So if you have more capital, you may still emphasize, you know, distribution first over monetization. If you have less capital, you may need to make that choice earlier.
So we've done a couple rounds.
Advertising is actually really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And even if you have tens of thousands of users, you're not even close. You need to have hundreds of thousands of unique visitors coming to your site before you can really get beyond the networks and actually get a decent CPM. So if you are getting people to subscribe, I think most advertising sites wish they were a subscription-based model. So consider seeing if that is going to work with the attention before giving up on that, I'd say.
Yeah, we've tried a couple different things where we've tried first free, but we're having a real hard time getting people to convert. So right now we're charging, she's charging $5 for, you know, the first month and then $15 after that. So we're trying that.
Have you done any user surveys or talked to user about what they think are most valuable or what they would pay for?
We have been. We should probably do a little more of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people won't always say what they are actually going to do, but it might provide some discovery for you then to do later testing.
Thanks.
Arr. I be wondering, and I think I speak for many of us, will you be posting your deck?
Absolutely.
Can you give us the URL?
You're very good, sir. Slideshare.net/DMC500hats. That's where all my slides are. I have earlier versions of this up there, and this one, as soon as we get a decent net connection in this goddamn place, will be up soon.
I thank ye.
Arr. Very nice piratees, by the way.
Arr.
I'm not going to attempt to follow that guy up. So, Charlie O'Donnell, Path 101. We help people with their careers. I'd be interested in hearing about spending a lot of time on space on the front page with take a tour, explanations, here's what's going on, versus just
here's a bunch of stuff that's already going on. You people figure it out.
Right.
I'd say you want to balance between both. You want to think about the type of people that are coming to your site and what they would be looking for. What we've noticed is that it's important to let them go through a tour, possibly on the next page if they want. At the same time, if you have a good value proposition and a sign up and a call to action to even sign up, and then next to it have the tour in case people want even more information, that's valuable. And then if you're some sort of network and there actually is activity that would suck people in, you want to let them kind of feel that out. And at the same time, have a good call to action on those type of pages as well. So I'd say all of the above and just have a good balance between those.
Right. When we did our site, we basically optimized for new users because it turns out existing users, they learn your site. They take the time to learn, where all the things are. So you can actually put a lot of that stuff below the fold or on another page or on the right hand on navigation. But your new users, they're either going to do something or bounce. So you really have to capture them immediately. So the biggest button on our screen is on the top, part of our screen, and it's, create a slideshow now or, do something now. And then you try to sell them along the way, but every single click is usually about a 30% drop off in conversion. So really in the fewest number of clicks, you want to start converting people and inform them on the fly. That's what we found was successful.
I think it's huge if you know exactly who your user is. And this is one thing we talk about at Legit all the time. Is I want to make sure that if somebody lands on our page and they're not a publisher or they're not a blogger, we have nothing. I want them to know they're not in the right place, because that any further engagement doesn't help the situation. In fact, it just sort of pollutes the situation. So it's really good if you know who you're trying to message to and then directly message them and figure out how to reject everybody else.
And one thing I don't want to give the impression is that these numbers are averages that work for everyone. So I think you may want to be looking at those conversion percentages with specific slices of audience, either from a certain marketing channel source or that came in with a certain keyword or that it's self-identified based on some type of need or theme. I don't know. I think the answer to all this is test, right? So I don't know for your site whether that's going to be the case or not, but if you have a specific activation metric that you're measuring, try and test a certain set of cases where you do or don't have a tour or a video, and then see whether the response increases or not, and continue to test that with different variations. All right, so I think we're out of questions. Maybe just a few references to resources. Not necessarily about metrics, but there's a book called Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion by Cialdini, which I just think is a great insight into human mind and how we make decisions about things. Putting the Fun in Functional is a terrific presentation by Amy Jo Kim on applying game mechanics to websites. She's done a number of variations on that talk. That one in particular was done at the eTech 2006. Andrew Chen writes a site called Futuristic Play, and he talks about lots of things about virtual games and social networks. In particular, he just wrote a post that was absolutely fantastic on decay on social networks, something that Lance was just talking about. So that acquisition of users and decay of users and how to optimize or prevent that. Don't Make Me Think is a great book by Steve Krug just on how to lay out your site. And then also Ralph Koster, also somebody coming from the game design world, A Theory of Fun. I believe that book is out of print now, but you might be able to find it used. Overall, I'd say a lot of things have been coming out of the game industry and being applied to traditional websites now, where we're looking at addictive behavior and sort of game mechanics that people do on those types of sites for normal websites. One last thing I would leave you with is email. Like I was talking about product features, spend most of your time on email on subject lines, not on body text. Start out with the body text that just says, click on this link, and focus most of your time on email subject line testing to see whether you get open rates and click-throughs that work. Later, if you want to go back and optimize body content, you can.
Also, the friendly from, the actual, who it's from, actually matters too. It turns out that affects conversion rate by 10 to 20% sometimes.
Any feedback or thoughts on this talk and presentation, I'd love to hear about. My email is dave@500hats.com. Or you can leave, once we get the slides posted, you can leave comments directly on the slides. Brief plug for those of you who are interested in using APIs, mashery.com, full disclosure, a company I'm an investor in, helps provide APIs for companies that need that type of work. Thanks a lot for coming.
Arr! Arr!